Okay, good afternoon. We're here to talk, Ralph's here to talk to us about the screencasting, which is running an application on one server and shooting it to another to do demonstrations.
Sort of.
Sort of?
Sort of.
Well, you will educate me.
I will attempt to educate you on what I think screencasting is.
Okay, thank you.
It's a very loose term. So, yes, my name is Ralph Giles. I volunteer for the ZipOrg Foundation, where we do free multimedia codecs on Vorbis, Icecast, things like that. I also work on GoScript, PostScript to PDF conversion and renderer, which has been part of the Linux printing chain for a very long time. I don't work for Blender. I just bought the t-shirt. I'm here from Vancouver, Canada, so thank you, everyone, for inviting me. Well, you're asking for me. So, how many of you know what screencasting is? We've had one opinion. Does anyone think they know what screencasting is? What's screencasting? Absolutely. Okay. So yeah, the definition I go by is that you record your screen, you make a movie, and then you put it on the internet for other people to look at. And usually you do that for tutorial purposes or to advertise your software, essentially, just like you do with screenshots, to show what it looks like, to demonstrate it to other people, to show off the bling on your desktop. Screencasting is sort of a marketing term. It's that didn't work very well. Sorry. It's riding on the popularity of podcasting. And podcasting is when you take an audio file and you use RSS feeds to get people's audio players to automatically download it. And since it takes forever to download these things, they're waiting for you to play. I have never seen people really do that with screencasting. You can get RSS feeds of screencasts, but mostly what people mean by that is just recording their screen and putting up a static file for people to look at. I don't know why the difference, but I think conceptually it's just podcasting is cool. It's about distributing stuff on the internet. Screencast, so we'll take screenshots and we'll put that together with podcasting, and that'll be screencasting. So, chosen by popular events. So, how many of you have actually made a screen recording before? Okay, there's quite a few of you. What tools did you use?
GVidCap?
Oh. Okay. Anything else?
VNC Rec,
okay, that's another good thing. So when I proposed this talk, I had just gotten Istanbul to work, which is a GNOME applet, this little thing in the taskbar, you just click record, you click stop, whatever. And I thought it worked great, so I thought, oh, that's easy, I'll show everybody how to use it with an all make screencast. I just discovered that the software is a little bleeding edge and it doesn't always work. So what I want to focus on this tutorial is getting everybody, I hope at least everybody who's bought a laptop, to get the software running on your computer, because once you can record stuff, then you can show off your software and work on the other elements of it. So just as an outline, I'm going to talk for a little bit about what I think screencasting is and some of the issues around it, just so we're all on the same page. And then I'll do some demos, and then we'll try and get all of you to do a recording. And then we'll break into groups. There's not very many of us, so that should work, and look at each other's screencasts. Because an important part of screencasting is that you're essentially performing your software for other people to see. So just like acting, just like presenting, it's something you can work on your presentation skills for. So it's good to have feedback for that. So think about something that you'd like to show off. Hopefully all of you have something that you like doing on your computer. I'll talk a little bit more. We can try again. And then if there's time, we can talk about uploading and advanced topics like audio and editing. So a bit of history. In the beginning, software was almost all command line. And so seeing what the screen looked like wasn't very exciting. And so usually when people were advertising that software, they would use illustration, which would give you some idea of what it was supposed to look like, or the feeling you were supposed to have using it, and not actually what the program looked like, because no one cared about that. And even if there were graphics, they weren't very sophisticated. So in the beginning, there was a command line. And even when there were GUIs, people would have illustrations. So this is an Amiga game from the early 90s. And you don't see what the game looks like. You see a photograph of somebody falling under Tetris blocks. And so that's exciting. That's what the game actually looks like, which is not so bad, but that's not on the box anywhere. You have to load the game if you want to see that view. I remember thinking it was really cool, 3D Tetris, but it's not much to look at. Likewise, here's another Amiga game. These are all from archive.org. The game doesn't look like that. Even modern games don't have graphics that detailed, but you know, that was supposed to be an interesting cover for everyone to look. So that's how people advertised their software back in those days. Because this doesn't convey so much. Once people did, With the development of GUI software, people did get more interested in what it looked like, and especially as it got prettier, people wanted to show what it looked like. So people started taking screenshots. So it showed up first in manuals and tutorials where people would show you what the dialogues looked like and which buttons to click on and that sort of thing. And then later with the internet, people started posting images on websites. In the free software community, that really took off with around the turn of the century. Does anyone remember themes.org? Does anyone still use it? Yeah, so this was a really hot site when I was a teenager because people would post their themes for picking out their desktop and all their background images and screenshots of all their windows artfully arranged, and it was all very cool. This was an archive.org shot, and unfortunately they didn't archive all the huge images of people's desktops, so it's hard to see exactly what they looked like. But there are still resources like this today, like arc.gnome.org. People have screenshots of their desktops, but also themes and so on. So people are doing that. But as computers have developed, screenshots have become people are starting to feel they're insufficient. Because as GUI software has developed, it's become less about what your desktop looks like and more about the interaction design. So people who are doing eye candy now for their desktops are using, you know, XGL and AIGX to make the windows spin and animate, and so it's about the animation. And even people doing serious GUI software are worried about the interaction design. Not just what does the screen look like, but how do you interact with the software and how easy is it to get things done. And so for that, you really need something more than a picture. If you're trying to explain to someone what menus to go through to get to something, a picture is not really worth 1,000 words. So I think the future has been moving towards screen movies, which can show the interaction design and all those other sorts of things. So now that people are seeing things move, now that you want to be able to see how it interacts, people are sometimes interested in seeing how things move. It takes longer time. It takes longer to watch a movie, but it can also communicate a lot more than a still image can. So let's start with screenshots. Screenshotting is well supported. There's lots of tools. The major open source desktops have a screenshot utility. Even MS-DOS had a print screen button. So Ksnapshot, there's GNOME has a take screenshot thing. Sorry about the fonts here. On the command line, there's the ImageMagick package provides a screenshot utility you can use from the command line, import minus window root, and then you give it a file name. And there's also a venerable tool called XWD, which dumps the window from the X server directly into a special XWD format that you have to convert before you can see anything. So just to show, sorry, this is a borrowed laptop. It turns out it's not wise to mix rare earth magnets and hard drive. So yeah, if you say import minus window root screen.png, and in the meantime we can try. I think it's under accessories, take a screenshot. And there's a screenshot. So we can save it. We can open. And there's a shot of the screen as we were downloading the software, which isn't very interesting, but there you go. This is done now, so I can import. Can everybody see that okay? Yeah. And there's, it's a bit confusing, but there's a screenshot of the screen that we just took. It's hard to get ImageMagick to quit. Yeah, you'd think that would work. Oh, so yeah, this is the confusing thing with screenshots, is I'm trying to get focus on the terminal window here, which is the screenshot of the terminal window. So let's close this. Let's close this. And maybe. Yeah. Anyway. Quickly lost our place. anyway, that's how you can record stuff from the screen. Now, conceptually, a movie is just a sequence of still images. You play them back fast enough and you get the illusion of motion. So conceptually, all you have to do is keep taking snapshots of the screen, just like we just did, and put them together into a movie. The problem is most of the screenshot tools are too slow. It's hard to get data out of the X server at 30 frames a second so you can get a nice, smooth movie. So you can't just write a shell script that calls XWD every so often. So you need a dedicated tool. It's also nice to have a dedicated tool because video encoding is a pain, and it's nice if it'll do it for you. The other thing you need to do is you do have to compress video to put it online. Image formats like Bing and JPEG are already compressed, and they look for redundant areas of the image to make the file smaller so it's easier for people to download. But a 30-second film has almost 1,000 images in it. And so 1,000 times the normal image size is still more than most people want to download. So you have to use a special format to compress the video. So something like MPEG or Omfiora or Flash to put it up there. Now just a note on formats. I developed 3 formats, so I'm going to give you a lecture about it. I'll try to be brief. Most video, casual video that you see on the web today is in sites like YouTube and Google Video, and that's all in Flash. And so most of the time that Flash is encoded in Flash Video, which is FOV. There, for screencasts that you see from other proprietary operating systems, are usually in Windows Media format or in MPEG. The problem with these formats for Linux users is that they're patented. So in much of the Western world, that includes the United States and Canada and Japan, but also Australia, it's infringing on a patent if you make, use, or distribute an MPEG encoder or a Windows Media encoder or decoder. So we should not be using these on the Linux desktop. So as some free alternatives you can use, animated GIF is one thing that people do screenshots in. This just used to be an evil patented format because it uses the LZW compression scheme, but the patent on that expired in 2005 in the last jurisdiction. So now it's free to use. The other one I would suggest is Omfiora. That's one thing that I work on, and that's one of the few free video codecs that gives you efficient compression. Some others you can use are PNM files, Motion JPEG, Ming, which is an animated version of Ping. Those are all good intermediate formats, but they have very poor playback support in general, and they don't compress very well, so they're good for working on your video while you're developing it, but I wouldn't suggest posting video in those formats. Just to go over the two major formats in detail, the advantage of animated GIF is there's playback support in almost everything. I'm sorry? Yes. So GIF has been one of the image formats on the World Wide Web since the very beginning, NCSA, or not even before NCSA, but the first graphical web browser supported GIF, and as soon as it was an animated format, they supported it. So anybody can play this in their browser. You can embed it right in the web page, and it'll just work. One of the drawbacks for screencasting is it's limited to 256 colors. So that means if you have a nice, subtle interface with lots of gradients and shading, it's going to be dithered, which, depending on your application, may or may not look kind of not very good. Depends on what you're trying to show off. If you're just trying to be practical, it doesn't really matter. It's otherwise lossless. It does a good job encoding flat lines. It's sort of on the web, you use JPEGs for smooth images and use GIF for images with sharp edges. So it does a good job with that. It has a relatively poor compression for screencasts. It's pretty good, but you can do better with a video format. Omfiora has native playback support generally only on Linux. Almost all Linux distributions now ship this out of the box. So if your intended audience who are going to be looking at your software are on Linux or other free operating systems, then it should just work. But people on Mac OS and people on Windows will have to download and install a decoder plugin. And so that's a barrier that most people won't go through. It offers better compression than GIF, so it's better for longer things. And the other big advantage is that you can have sound support. GIF is just an image, so you can put it there. But if you want to have narration or if the audio interface is important for your program, then the odd format will let you multiplex compressed sound and compressed video, so you can put them in together. The other thing is that unlike GIF and like JPEG, it's designed for smooth images. So you hit very low bit rates. If you try and compress it to make the file very small, you'll get blurring, especially around the sharp edges in your images. And so sometimes it doesn't look so good at low bit rates. You see that in YouTube all the time. I mean, the video is very blocky and smudgy because they're trying to save on bandwidth. So just to review, animated GIF is best for small images, like if you're showing a single widget or the title bar or some small thing with a little bit of animation. And OGCR, I think, is best if you're doing full screen videos or you're doing a tutorial where it's going to be 15 minutes long. The other advantage with OGG is you generally embedding it in the browser doesn't work yet. We're trying to get that implemented. But sometimes it's nice to watch the video in a separate video player because then you can pause it and you can start and stop it and you can watch it full screen if you want. All sorts of different things like that. And so that can be a real advantage with longer elements. So screen recording tools. You mentioned GVidCap, which I actually didn't find when I was researching this. Okay. So there's these are sort of the major ones I found that seem to work. So there's a package called Istanbul. This is the one that, this is my favorite. So it uses GStreamer. And it, if you're on the GNOME desktop, it'll put a little applet in the taskbar. So you just click record and click stop, and it'll save your video for you. If you don't use GNOME, you can run it from the command line as well. Byzance is a similar thing, but it encodes to GIF. And it's the only thing I know that makes good, well-compressed animated GIF files. But more in general things, there's Record My Desktop, which is it's a sort of a hacky script, but it seems to work pretty well. There's XVidCap, which is, I think, the oldest screen recorder for Unix. There's an X11 version from the early 90s to the late 90s, I think. And there's a GTK version now, so it's a little easier to use. It, by default, I think, records to MPEG, so I'm going to discourage you from doing that. But that can be very useful if you're going to upload to YouTube or something like that for other people to look at. And it can also save PNM files and things like that you can use a separate tool to encode to Theora. And finally, VNC can be a very good option. If you can't get the others to work, VNC is the virtual network computer, so it's this protocol for doing remote display of desktops. And there's a recording thing which will let you record the stream to disk, and then you can re-render that and encode it to video. And in particular, somebody in the Czech Republic did a patch for it to outprint an uncompressed output in a uncompressed video format. Despite having MPEG in the name, it's not a patented format. It's just YUV frames with a text header. And that you can pipe to FFmpeg to Theora or the Theora example encoder to make Theora movies. And VNC can also be nice if your machine is slow or if the thing you're trying to demonstrate uses a lot of CPU, because you can do the encoding on another machine because it works over the network. And so that's great if you're trying to get shots of your embedded device, and it can be nice if you're trying to get something else or if you're running a small window. So let's try and record something on the screen. Let's see. Oops. That's not what I wanted. Okay. So let's start with... Thunder sound and video, the Istanbul desktop session recorder. And so when you launch it, it puts a little red record button up in the taskbar. And so you can say, please record my desktop. And you can move a window around, maybe close it. Can we open the windows at full volume? If we can. Okay, that's good enough. Stop. And if we're lucky, we'll get a video. So one of the drawbacks of this Istanbul is it tries to compress on the fly, and video encoding is quite expensive. So sometimes it's really laggy, and sometimes it can't keep up. But here we have a little video of our screen. And if I click play, we'll see if we see anything. Yep. So I don't know, it's very small there. Yeah, doesn't look like it worked. In part? Yeah, fade it. So, one.org, fade it. And then, oh, right. So this is what I say about the software not being so useful. Like, this is the first time I tried it on this machine. And I think this means it's still encoding. Yeah. So we'll let it do that for a bit. My fan built. Okay, well, in the meantime, let's talk about uploading a little bit. Usually what people do with screencasts is they just upload the static file to their web host and then link to it from their blog. It's nice to make a frame image to reference it from, poster image, but it's not necessarily important. And if you want one, the best way to do that is just to play it in your video player and then select an informative frame and dump that out. If you host your own blog, you're fine because you have plenty of storage you can put things on. For OGG files, there's not a great way to host the video right now because services like YouTube won't take them. We're still working on that. You can upload OGG files to Google Video, and they'll transcode them to Flash, and you can also, you're supposed to be able to download the original as well. And those two sites are really the Flickr of screenshots. So a lot of people, when they're putting their photos onto their blog, they'll upload them to Flickr and then cross-link from there. And then if you're using a free blog hosting site, you don't need a lot of extra space. I don't know. How many here have their own websites? Some. How many don't? Okay, so a lot of Linux developers have their own just because it's more convenient, and that's the best way to do it. But I couldn't find any good places to do hosting without buying a website hosting package. Okay, mine is still stuck here, so I would suggest that, even though I failed to demonstrate anything, we go ahead and try and get it working on everyone else's laptop. So I would suggest that we break into small groups, like 4 to 6 people, and then try and get the software installed and see if you can get it recorded, and see if you can get something to record. And I'll step down from here, and we can all try and get the stuff running. And then once it's running, we can call it. I'll come back here and say some more. Okay? So be friendly. This is a conference. We all meet in real space so we can interact, and so you can watch me, because you can do that over the video. And so let's all get together and see if we can get screencasting happening. Any of them, yeah. So here are URLs. A lot of these are packaged, so you can ask get install Istanbul or Byzant or the VNC rack and record my desktop. You might have to install from source. Also, I think yuminstall will work if you're on Red Hat or SUSE. So pick one that you're trying. Sometimes. Okay. Okay. Yeah, as I said, I mean, different things work for different people. The other thing with Istanbul is... Yes, so Istanbul can do that. You can select an area to record, and it gives you a special cursor, and then you can drag a box like that. And you can also say, record the mouse pointer. It can record external sound if your microphone works. Record 3D is a good option to try if it doesn't work for you the first time. What that does is it turns off the XDamage extension. So there's an extension called XDamage, which in the X server sends notifications for whenever an area of the screen is drawn to. And that's great because it means that the screen recording software only has to pull data that's changed, and that reduces the bandwidth going over the X protocol significantly. So it runs faster. But the problem is that sometimes that extension is buggy, and often with things like 3D graphics and video overlays, the graphics card doesn't bother recording that at all because it's being updated 30 times a second. And so you just get a black area where your video that you were trying to show off is in your screen thing. So you can turn off Record 3D because the biggest problem is with OpenGL drivers. And if you turn on Record 3D, instead of using the XDamage extension, it will try and bring the whole screen in over and over. So that's much slower, and that will limit the size of the area you can record. But there you go. Want to try it again? It doesn't work yet. Okay. So here you can see it working. If I take a small enough area, you can see me typing. And so that's with the Aura movie that you can just upload to your website, and off it will go. Excuse me. Okay? I believe so. Oh, yeah.
Can you control the frames per second?
Yeah. And... there's no interface for it, but you can hack the code if you want. This is actually written in Python, so it's fairly easy to just change the numbers and off you go. So you could have it scale down the desktop. I guess it does seem wise to try a smaller area. The other thing you can do is scale it down. And often when you're doing, you have to be careful with recording your whole desktop because maybe you think your 2,000 by 1,000 dual monitor setup looks pretty. But most people can't play back a movie that big, even if their monitor is that big. So it's important to think about sort of who your audience is and how are they going to be watching it. And so it's often a good idea to select a small region or to do it, either reduce your resolution so it's smaller or run in an ActiveX server.
Another comment is to trade off your recording screen size with your... number of frames per second.
Yeah.
So if you have to record a large frame size, then you can reduce the frames per second to be able to trip.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And does everybody have net access who's got a laptop? Because if you need any of the software, I have a USB key I can pass around.
Yep. Can you control this stuff remotely by, say, a command line? So is this HMI in the box and controlling it?
Yes, if you have X off. if you have X authority. So if you log into yourself remotely and run it in a separate terminal, you mean? Yeah. Yeah, that usually works. The, let's see. Sorry, this is a slow machine. Yeah, if there's a command line for Istanbul and for Byzance, and record my desktop is and X big cat. Okay. No, I haven't used that one very much. So yeah, it's going to be as well.
It's possible to log into the machine remotely and start XvidCap on the remote screen and capture the remote screen, but it's very slow.
Right, because it uses the X protocol. Yeah, VMC is a better idea for that, but you said you couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, I couldn't get
it to work. Yeah, so I actually tried with my Nokia tablet, because that would be a great VMC remote demo, but I got about 4 frames out of it, and then it crashed. But I tried doing VMC on my local machine to itself, and that works fine. So, yeah, as I said, the software was not as robust as I was hoping. So that's why I want to make sure everybody can get it going. And then hopefully then you'll be either inspired to make screencasts, which will inspire people to fix the software, or be so annoyed you'll fix it yourself.
The comment you made there is a very important one. Where I work, I actually use this technique to demonstrate bugs, to capture bugs, things that you did in the lead up to it that caused it, and to demonstrate that to the software engineer who's responsible for the code.
Oh, wow.
And they go from disbelief to, that's a bug, very quickly. Whereas if you don't have the video, it can take quite a while.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Also, Ubuntu has been doing screencasts to just advertise Ubuntu, and so they have, this is how you burn an Ubuntu CD that you've downloaded to your Windows machine, or, you know, this is how you make it dual boot, and things like that. And so that's a very nice thing for new users, so they can, instead of having to read the instructions, you can just watch the video, and then it's less intimidating to have to do it yourself.
Will there be any support for like multiple monitors? I mean, at work we normally have like 3 screens set up, and you might have like 2 screens doing one thing, and you want to be working on another screen and just basically just record the output on these 2 screens.
Right. It depends on how your drivers are set up. So all of the X things only work on a particular X display, and so you'd have to encode it. But a lot of the dual monitor setups are like the HAI driver has the single desktop that spans both monitors. So if you do that, you just get one image.
I have experience with that one. What I did was I started up 2 GVidCaps, one on each screen, and I was able to successfully record a program there and a program there simultaneously, and I could start even more than 2 if you... but you have to be careful with the frame rate and the frame size. You have to trade that off against how many GVidCaps you run.
Right. Did you merge them later so you could see both at once? Or?
I attempted to merge 2 1280 by 1024 videos into a 2-screen wide video, and I found I was exceeding the capability of Image Magic something else I was using to do the merge.
Yeah.
I had to hack it and increase the frame size, and it ended up just taking so long I abandoned it. So I ended up just processing the individual videos separately.
Okay.
Synchronization becomes a pain in the neck.
Absolutely. Yeah?
Do any of these allow you to add audio over the top, or...?
So Istanbul will do that. Record my desktop will do that. I think GVidCap will do that. So all but Byzance and VMCREC will do that. So how's it going? I mean, has anybody got it working yet? Okay. Repeatability. Okay. Does it work if you turn off Record 3D? No. Yeah, it has a tendency to hang. Is this 64-bit or 32-bit?
32-bit.
Okay.
Try one price. I think I'm going to try something else.
Yeah, I would try something else at this point.
It's not a great feedback, I would say. But at least I'm consistent with the...
Yeah.
A lot of tests at one point.
Okay. Back it off as far as you can.
Yeah.
It's definitely something where having a fast machine helps. So, you got it working?
As far as I'm working.
Okay. There you go. Okay, yeah. Moving around.
That's fine. I'm going to try and set a single setup, and then I get it forward.
Oh, it crashes when you open the dialog?
I'm not sure if it's anything to do with GStream or anything, because it's not good.
Which GStream do you have?
Not sure.
CSC inspect minus one assertion. Sounds like GVidCap works really well, so maybe you should try that if you're having trouble.
It took me several days to get that to work on that and had a price for.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't paying for it.
And GVidCap is all working on Ubuntu, because what I'm seeing here is definitely not what you've got up there.
Okay.
We're getting an old version coming up as well.
What version do you, which Ubuntu do you have?
I've got that.
I'm going to go to the next one. Is there a way to get some character
Thank you.
No. Yes, well, all of the budget is
Some of you have gotten it working, and some of you haven't, but can you all try and, those of you who do have it working, can you try and make a movie that you can share with everyone else? So pick something, if you've got software you're actually working on, can you demo that? Or if not, just stuff moving around your screen? You ran out of battery. So does anyone have a recording they'd like to show off at this point? Okay, if not, we'll wait 10 more minutes, then we'll go back to more formal stuff.
So Istanbul has a couple of times that the user interface for Istanbul is confusing.
So it puts a red dot in the corner, and that's the record button. That's not the recording light. So you're supposed to click on that to press it to start recording. And when you do that, it changes to a square gray stop button. And then you can push the stop button to stop it recording. And then it'll turn to a disk while it's encoding and saving. And then it's supposed to go back to a red record button so you can do it over again. What would you like?
You want someone to come on the show?
Oh, something to show.
Yeah. Right, not the English men not only can't play cricket, they also can't write good UIs. What else did you say?
Hello.
think this is okay. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying about you get some blurring at low bit rates, but. Ooh. So was it smoother on your machine, the playback?
No.
Okay. It's the frame rate it was getting. It's always hard to tell whether I'm. This is a slow laptop, so I might be dropping frames.
The preference is to make it 600 by 800.
Okay.
Recording the whole screen.
And scaling it down, yeah.
And this seems to be no ability for me to.
So if you right click on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here we have the Merrill desktop. So, does anybody see any other buttons in here? Yeah, it's completely eligible. So, it's good for showing off the 3D effects, which is, so we're running the Merrill desktop, and so you can see that the,
when you switch workspaces, the whole screen spins on a cube, and the windows fade in and out. And so that from that point of view, it's showing everything, but you can't read anything on the screen. So you wouldn't want to do this if he was actually showing off the email application. And so, right. Does anybody else have a movie they'd like to show off? Anyone else have a movie at all? Yeah? You can't?
I can't play it.
Yeah. You can't play it?
Yeah, I'm waiting to play it.
Okay. Okay, I guess I'll talk a little bit more. So, unfortunately, you've seen how difficult it can be to get running, but it sounds like at least about half of you have gotten some kind of recording going with a small, if you use a small enough area, and with Istanbul, you have to kill it when you're done. The thing to think is, as you pointed out, you're performing your software for other people to look at. So it's really good to show it to other people and say, can you see what I'm trying to show you or not? Because you use your program all the time. So you know how it works. And you're often very fast with it. And that can be great if you're an artist and you're just trying to create something really cool because everybody's, you know, their jaw falls off when you make something beautiful in 30 seconds. But if you're trying to show people how to use things, you often need to go slower so that they can absorb the information. I was hoping we could break into groups and do critiques of each other's videos, but it sounds like we don't have very many of them. So,
So, I'll just go on to think about performance pointers. The things to think about, as we all discovered, is think about resolution and size. It sounds like for a lot of people, just being able to record the screen is the limiting factor. So see how big a thing you can make and use smaller things. And think about the pacing, as I said. But also think about the resolution in terms of what people are going to be able to see. So it needs to be high enough resolution that people can read the text or see the buttons if that's what you're trying to show off. And it needs to be not so big that it's hard to watch. Think about pacing. Keep it interesting. Don't spend a lot of time hunting around in the menus, but move smoothly and confidently between the things that you're doing. And you can be focusing either on practical function, doing a demonstration of what's going on, or on eye candy, just making stuff look really cool. You've also pointed out that, what's your name?
Ben.
Ben here's also pointed out that there's lots of other things you can do with screencasting. I always think about it in terms of advertising or software, but it's also you can use it to record what you were doing, so you can reproduce bugs easily and show things to developers. You can use it to see where you've gone wrong when you're doing something complicated. People have also used it for user interface design testing, where you video someone's face and someone's hands and you record their screen all together. And you can look at that in a synchronized way, and so when you ask them to do a task, you can see where they're looking on the screen, and you can see how long it takes them to move the mouse and actually click on something. And so that can be very useful in terms of analyzing your UI design. Does anybody have any questions? Right. Yes. So Istanbul and my screen, record my desktop, and XvidCat can all record audio from the microphone. And so the best thing to do there is just to pretend you're showing it to somebody or to actually show it to somebody. Another thing is a good idea is it's harder because there aren't very good video editors for Linux, but if you record in professional production, audio is almost always done separately. And so you record your video, your screen, and then when you have everything that's looking really good, then you record an audio track on top of it. Now, there's no application that will let you record an audio track on top of a video. No? Yeah, it's pretty appalling, but the state of video editing on the free desktop, there are professional tools for Mac OS and Windows that will let you do it. So what I suggest for that is just to play the video and then start recording in a recording application, then just play the video, and so narrate it as you go. And then you can record it separately, and then you can put them together either in a video editor or with Augfiora. There's a tool called Augfimerge, where you can take the Fiora file and the audio file, and it'll just multiplex them together for you. And so that's the way you can do it with post-production. Or you can just keep recording over and over again with narration until you get both of them right at once. Yeah?
The author of XvidCat made a couple of videos which demonstrated how to use this software. I thought he did a fairly reasonable job of how to do it. You might proceed to bring that up.
Yeah, no, it's a good way to showing off VideoCat software with VideoCat software is pretty cool. And the Ubuntu videos are also very good. They're on doc.ubuntu.com. And they're sort of a longer tutorial session, and they start with a title slide with the name and the licensing and everything else, and then the person goes through and narrates it. And it's very polished. It's a good example to start with. You had another question? I should also point out that VMware has a screen record function. I think it records the MPEG AVI, but I'm not sure. And so you can use FFmpeg to Fiora to transcode that. If you can get FFmpeg to Theora. With FFmpeg to Theora, I really suggest that people download the binary, because it'll be more up-to-date than what your distribution ships, and there's a static binary that's available. It's v2v.cc, little j, FFmpeg to Theora. And, yeah, so there are static binaries for most major operating systems. And so I would suggest using these over the packaged versions because they tend to work better. There we go. F5's a little buggy. So we have about 15 minutes left, so I can take more questions or we can do more tutorial stuff, but yeah.
This is probably a bit of a sensitive question, but in an ideal world, everyone would use Theora.
Yeah.
However, I think most of our audience isn't well educated. If you're going to publish, what would you publish in that would be the most useful for the world?
Are you going to ask her?
No.
I have something, you've got an answer, but I can also comment.
Okay. I mean, it really does depend on your audience. Video is completely balkanized on the internet. Microsoft wants you to use Windows Media, Apple wants you to use MPEG.
MPEG is a very technical standard, but because of the patent encumbrances, we can't all use it in free software. In free software, we want everyone to use free codecs, like on Theora. And so it depends on who you're talking to. If mostly Linux users you're trying to reach in your blog, or you're developing Linux software, then you should use Ogg. If you're trying to reach everyone else, you should use Flash. And you can do both. You can encode to MPEG and transcode to Ogg for Linux users, and you can upload the MPEG to YouTube and they'll encode it for Flash for you. Or you can try and do you can use VNC to SWF to make Flash directly and put that up yourself. But it really does depend on who you're trying to reach, because I mean they're completely separate groups. I think you should use Ogg, and you should just tell them, here's the plugins to download if you're on Windows, here's the plugins to download if you're on macOS, use the free format because it'll make the world better. That's what I would suggest, but depending on the context, that's not always appropriate. And in that case, I would use Flash or MPEG or Windows Media and just give a list like most video websites do. Did you want to answer that more? Or? Okay.
So, firstly, something like Theora, for all that it's a great format for doing certain things, when what you're doing is the screen recording, we saw this in the last demo that someone did, you can't read text very well. And that's it's not a fundamental thing just to Theora. You're going to have the same issue with low bitrate MPEG 4. There are codecs.
That's because that video was recorded
at half
the resolution.
Yes. But
it's also the bitrate, though.
You can do it, but basically you pay quite a very high bit rate to get readable text with those codecs. It's just a fundamentally inappropriate way of encoding that sort of information. So there are lots of other codecs appropriate for this. They're not widely deployed, that's the problem. Flash has one built in. Flash has a Flash screen thing, which is specifically designed for fairly static screen type things. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, so you've got this problem with using Theora, your potential audience might not have players. I do a lot of stuff with Theora. We usually use Cortado, which is a Java applet. It's web embeddable, it works. So if you have that on your blog, you just embed a little Java applet and it will play. All of the LCA videos are using that. And it basically works out of the box for pretty much everyone these days.
I thought Microsoft didn't ship Java anymore.
Yeah, but Microsoft doesn't ship Flash either. Most people have both Java and Flash.
Okay, so it gets installed with the browser then?
Often.
And they did seem to go to the Java version of the Linux and then they took it out and made it a lot for the computer to lose the client. Had the sun job, yay! Now all I know, that was sort of like all of my hacks to fix things, it got
So one thing that Cognato goes through a lot of effort to is actually to work on every JVM out there. It works on the Microsoft 1.1 JVM, it works on the Sun one, it works whatever you've got, basically. So that's worth a look at if you're worried about. If you're happy with the quality that you can get from Fiora and you want to get it out as something that everyone can see, that works pretty well in practice. Cortado? C-O-R-T-A-D-O?
Any more questions?
Yeah. I just want to say, I download a lot of sort of vodcasts or IPTV or whatever you want to call them. And, I mean, one of the things with that is there is no real right format. They tend to make it available in a whole bunch of formats. I mean, I'm just looking at one now, and there's like 6 formats you can download it in. So it may be that the answer, at least for the meantime, is you try and export it into as many formats as you possibly can and stick them up somewhere, and then people will choose the most appropriate format, whether it's an iPod or their PC or whatever they happen to be using it on.
I just want to know about the how about the format that BBC is using, the Real Player one, is it?
Real Player?
Yeah.
I don't actually know anybody who's using Real Player for new work. Everybody I know who's using Real Player is using it because they have always used Real Player. And it's a fine format, actually. I mean, I don't think there's a free encoder for it. Does anybody know? There's an open source for a real video. No, I thought there was some. Yeah, so there's very poor open source software support for it. But if you buy the tool, you can feed stuff to it and encode it that way. But I wouldn't suggest using it for new work. I'm sorry? Yes. Yes, there is Helix Player, but he was saying there is Helix Player, which is real open source, the media framework they use to implement media player, but they don't have an open source any of the codecs. So you can use it to play VR movies. But. So this is quite nice. This is an animated GIF made with Byzance, and you can see a video there. And this is what I was talking about, the dithering you get. The image is very grainy. I'm assuming it wasn't grainy when you recorded it. No. And so that's the sort of thing you get with animated GIF, is it's only got 256 colors, so it's sort of back to 1992 desktop.
Is it clear, though, if you zoom in the image, it'll detect the contrast, so it's clear?
Yeah, it's because it's scaled to my slightly smaller screen. Yeah. That's right. They're not designed for video, so they assume it's going to fit in a few K. Now, I should also say, with the Image Magic tools, you mentioned trying to run things through Image Magic, that Image Magic also does that. Even though it supports a lot of some video formats, it tries to uncompress the entire video into memory and then write it back out again. It doesn't do any stream processing, so you can't really use it on video. You can use it on tiny little things. One more?
Following on from the questions about Real Player, one of the features that I've seen in that is the ability to have two video windows, one of you as the presenter, as well as your desktop as well. Is it possible to do that with tools such as what we were using today?
No. You know, I think it would be great to add that, and I would like to, but right now there's no software to do that. The GStreamer framework that Istanbul uses is capable of doing that sort of thing, but somebody has to write a user interface for it. And, of course, every time you add more video, it gets slower. But, yeah, I like using a webcam to capture the speaker as well. It's something we like to do for recording talks as well. It would be very useful to have the slides and the speaker. Yes, you should pester Mike, because he's going to make VNC record video for us. Without crashing.
Couldn't you just display your webcam on the screen that you're doing with the presentation and then just record the whole lot? And then you've got yourself on the screen
You've got your audio.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Timing analysis that way as well. So, if that's it, I think we're done. Thanks for everyone for coming, and go out and make great screencasts. Show everyone how great the Linux desktop can be. I think this has been a lot of fun for everybody. If we can show our appreciation for Ralph. Thank you.